the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Do you know that one of the most interesting as well as dangerous places for your children to go may be the public school library, or for that matter, a public library in your community? We're going to be talking about the conflict between the parental responsibility to protect our children from explicit sexual material and what seems to be the self-conscious mission of many libraries, even public school libraries, which is to expose kids to as many different, materials as possible. I'll be talking to you today about a controversy that's really localized in Fayetteville, Arkansas, but it has nationwide ramifications because what's going on there is just a subset of what is likely to be going on in virtually every community across this country. At least it will happen if parents have much of an idea of what just might be going on in the school library. We're going to be talking about this, and we're going to invite your conversation as well. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Big issues in the news. First of all, I want to take you to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where a major trial is now ongoing concerning the teaching of intelligent design in the public schools. I debated this issue some months ago on Scarborough Country on MSNBC, but the trial is just now opening, and it's going to be a fascinating development to see exactly how this trial comes together, not to mention how it comes out. I agree with those who say this is kind of like the Scopes trial in reverse. What we have here is a school district that is now on trial, not for teaching evolution, but for teaching that there just might be an alternative to evolution in terms of scientific theory. We're going to get down to the bottom line of what intelligent design is all about and what really is going to be possible, I think, in the public schools when you look at this court case. It'll be interesting to see where it goes from here. This is a federal district court. This is not just a state court. It's not a local court. This is a federal issue. It's going to be argued then on the largely constitutional grounds. And you already see all the opponents of intelligent design coming out with the fang showing. I mean, they are out with their sharpest arguments, and they aren't mincing any words. And if you look at the news coverage, you'll see that they see intelligent design as a major threat to evolution. And all you have to do is look at the media firestorm over this to know that something big is happening. And let me just tell you what really gets in the elite media, the liberal media's way here, what really causes them the problem. The majority of Americans don't believe in evolution. I mean, more than 80 years after this became an issue in the public schools, more than 150 years after Darwin wrote to The Descent of Man, the majority of Americans still aren't buying it. And the liberal, the elite, the cultural elite, they just cannot understand this. They cannot understand why we just don't get it. And as a matter of fact, we're going to be looking in coming days at some of the statements made at this trial and by some of those who are the opponents of intelligent design writing in the major newspapers. I was looking at one of these articles last night in which the author simply said, look, you know, you can believe in God. You just can't believe that God created the world, much less that God created human beings. That's just not an explanation. You can believe in some kind of spiritual force. You just can't believe in a personal God who designed and created the world as we know it. Well, I do. And I know most of you do, too. And there is the problem when it comes to deciding what's going to be taught in the public schools. Mentioned to you yesterday that Nigerian Archbishop Akinola is in the news again. This is Peter Akinola, who is the primate of the Anglican Church in Nigeria. He has broken with the Anglican Communion, and he has the attention of the Bishop of Washington, D.C. That's the Episcopal Bishop of Washington, D.C. His name is John B. Chain, C-H-A-N-E. I've talked about him on this program before. And for good reason, he represents really the far left in terms of the Anglican Communion here in the U.S., the Episcopal Church. And he was in California before he went to Washington. And we shouldn't be surprised that he has now unloaded an attack upon Archbishop Akinola. He said this, why does this archbishop spend so much time on human sexuality issues while so many of his countrymen and women are oppressed by poverty? Where is the strong voice of the Nigerian Anglican Church in opposing the continued neglect of vulnerable women and children or in advocating on behalf of the poorest of the poor? I want to take this argument apart for just a moment. I want us to think about it because this is precisely the kind of argument we will often hear that is really put against those who would make human sexuality an issue. who would contend against same-sex marriage, who would contend for traditional marriage, who would contend for a biblical vision of sexuality, we are told that all we care about is sex. And you know what? For some people, that just might be an accurate allegation. It just could be that there would be some persons who care only about sex. I haven't met those persons, but there could be that there would be such persons. But you know what? That is still not an argument against the truthfulness of what they're saying. That is a non sequitur. It is a dodge. It is a maneuver to try to avoid getting at the issue. It might actually be legitimate to raise the question as to where is the Nigerian Anglican Church on any number of issues. But that is not an excuse. And I'm just posing this hypothetically. I have no idea that they are guilty of any neglect on these other issues. But even if they were, do you understand what I'm saying here? It is still a dodge for this bishop in Washington to say, hey, they don't talk about these issues, so we can ignore them on this. You know, we all have the issues we want to talk about. And the easiest and most cowardly dodge is to say that issue isn't important and this issue is more important. But I want to tell you, I believe Archbishop Akinola is exactly right. The issue of human sexuality is so important that it has to be settled. And it will either be settled on the basis of Scripture or it will be settled on the basis of modern, postmodern, secular reasoning. Those are two irreconcilable worldviews. And therein lies the conflict. Speaking of conflict, the issue of gender is big. I wrote quite a bit about it over the last 24 hours at albertmohler.com. That's M-O-H-L-E-R.com. You will find a couple of articles at my weblog. One has to do with the USA Today piece that asks where the males are on college campuses. For every 100 males who graduate with a baccalaureate degree, 135 women graduate. Now, that is a significant imbalance. And you're talking about a major reversal. I mean, you go back 50 years, it was mostly men. Now it's increasingly women. And here's the question. Why are so many males underachieving? I'm interested that USA Today comes up with some interesting suggestions. They say here that the explanation may be that female teachers in elementary and middle schools, where male teachers are scarce, naturally enforce a girl-friendly environment that rewards students who can sit quietly. Not a strong point for many boys who earn poor grades and fall behind. Others argue that a smart isn't cool bias has seeped into boys of all racial and ethnic groups. Whatever the explanation, you're looking at a deficit here of 35 when you look at 100 males graduating and 135, and that can't be good for the society. Now, you would think that the obvious response to this would be, well, not so much that we need fewer women, but that we need more men. The deficit is on the male side. And it looks like what needs to be incentivized is for more young men to go to college and to stay in college and to graduate from college. Knowing the difference that college and university study makes in terms of long-term earnings and all the rest, you would think that there would be a near universal affirmation that we ought to do something about this problem, and if you think that, you would be wrong. Because USA Today published this, they also published an opposing view by Kim Gandy, who is president of the National Association for Women. Ms. Gandy said this, every few years, a report that women are gaining ground prompts panicky articles proclaiming that men are falling behind. Bottom line, I don't see a few more degrees signaling the fall of patriarchy. We already know women are smart, but no matter how smart you are, it's tough to win when the rules keep changing and you have to choose between work and family. In other words, she says, no problem, no problem. The fact that men are falling behind is no big deal because the only thing she's concerned about is the way she wants to frame every issue, which is the oppression of women. Meanwhile, in yesterday's edition of the Los Angeles Times, another very interesting article, this by Kathy Young, a columnist for the paper, and she addresses the fact that that there are these elite women, that is colleges and university women, who are saying that they intend upon graduation not to enter the professional career force, but instead to be stay-at-home moms. We talked about this last week. Major story in the New York Times. It is a signal development that so many women in these elite institutions now say that being a stay-at-home mom is their greatest aspiration, and that is driving the feminists nuts. Kathy Young's responding to their argument. She says this, what's clear is that in the 40 years since the rise of the modern women's movement, large numbers of women blessed with the opportunities denied to a previous generation have not followed the egalitarian feminist script. Instead, they have, to a greater or lesser extent, embraced traditional female roles, much to the chagrin of feminists. She goes on to say that the problem is that too many women see a choice. They see a choice because they can choose between staying at home or entering the workforce. She says in order to solve this problem, We need to get past the notion that the only obstacle to equality in parenting and homemaking comes from sexist men. She says the problem is women. The need is for greater flexibility in gender roles in the home. She says women are just too likely to regard child rearing as their turf, and they need to get over it. Where in the world did women get the idea that motherhood was special? Where in the world did they get the idea that mothers have a particular role to play in the nurture and raising of children? That's the big question that has the feminists scratching their heads. Kathy Young thinks that women have to get over thinking that they have a particular responsibility in childbearing. I don't think they are going to get over it. I think that's what's driving the feminists crazy. We'll be right back to talk about a situation in Fayetteville, Arkansas that could be the situation in your town, and it has to do with the library. Coast to Coast, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. In Fayetteville, Arkansas, there's quite a controversy going on, and it still is unresolved. It'll be interesting to see how this thing works out. But the bottom line is that it all started when some parents began to see what was in the public school libraries there in that community, and they complained. And I wrote about this in my commentary posted yesterday at albertmueller.com. It's entitled, Is the School Library Safe? And the reason why I wanted to give this attention is because it's just a microcosm of the kind of cultural conflict you'll find all across the country. And there is reason to look at this carefully, because even in the complexity of this controversy, there's just a whole lot to be learned. Let me lay this out for you a little bit. It would shock most parents to know what kind of books are being stocked in most libraries. I say most libraries. I would say most public school libraries and most public libraries unaffiliated with schools. I think you'd be surprised. I want to tell you why. Groups like the American Library Association and others, they are given, more or less conceded the authority by librarians to review the books and suggest what kind of books ought to be out there. And the ALA is way out there on the left. And just in case you doubt what I'm saying, go read the article, check out the links, and you'll find out exactly what I'm talking about. Because what you're looking at here is that the ALA has bought into the idea that sexual minorities need to be represented. That's the kind of phrase you will see. Underrepresented sexual minorities and sexual lifestyles need to be represented in these public school libraries as a part of the educational mission of the schools and of the libraries. And now, they also believe that basically that there should be no censorship from parents or from anyone else in this. The only kind of censorship they are perhaps willing to concede is the kind that is legally mandated, which is the ability of parents, at least, to say for their minor children, you can't read that or you can't check that out. But even those parents do not have the right in these schools to tell the children they can't look at this material, because it unless they check it out, is just freely available in so many of these libraries. Now, I mentioned a few of the titles specifically. There were three books that originally became the focus of concern there in Fayetteville, Arkansas. The books were It's So Amazing, It's Perfectly Normal, and The Teenage Guy's Survival Guide. I have all three of those books. I have looked at them personally just to make sure I know what I'm talking about here. And I would not give any of these books to my children. I would not want them to see it. If you go look at the drawings and the materials that are documented on the websites, I don't think you would want your kids to see it either. For instance, the Teenage Guy's Survival Guide tells teenage boys that pornography is fine. It's fine and good. It's natural and fine. Those are the specific words that are used. The books It's Perfectly Amazing, or It's So Amazing, and It's Perfectly Normal, these are books that are designed for young children. The It's So Amazing book for kindergartners through third graders, and the It's Perfectly Normal book from third graders to sixth graders. Now, let me just tell you that if you can keep a straight face while you look at these books, you're doing better than I can. The drawings are, they're just graphic and they're kind of ridiculous looking, if you ask me. But they contain a whole lot more information than I would want a child of this age to get anywhere near. I'm not opposed. If you've listened to this program for any length of time, you know I am not opposed to children reading books. And I am certainly not opposed to sex education, so long as parents direct it. I think both of those things are indeed not only good, but they are responsibilities. Children need to learn how to read and how to read with discernment at age-appropriate levels guided by parents. And children need to know not only the birds and the bees and the basic biology of human reproduction, but they need to understand how they must grow up to be, from girls to be wives and mothers, and as boys to grow up to be husbands and fathers. And it's very important they understand the complexities of sexuality and how not only to be discerning, but to be faithful in the midst of that. But you'd be shocked to know that a lot of these books, especially in the category known as young adult fiction, that's what you really need to look out for. And it may do you good just to go into a trade bookstore, a major chain bookstore, and look under the heading young adult fiction and look what you find. You'll find books like Melvin Burgess's Doing It. That title ought to tell you just about everything you need to know, and the cartoon on the front will tell you what the title doesn't yet convey. You have explicit heterosexual sexual technique that is described in these books. You have premarital sex between teenage boys and teenage girls presented as a goal, an aspiration that they should seek to fulfill, along with the very erotic, and guarantee if I was a teenager reading these books, it would be more than I could handle. You're talking about very high erotic content. You're talking about very clear descriptions of sexual acts. You're talking about very clear descriptions of bodies and parts and all the rest. Then you're looking at a clear agenda in many of these books to push a homosexual agenda. And I don't say that carelessly. There is just no doubt that that is what is being pushed here. And the ALA and its affiliated groups say this is in order to increase and to protect the self-esteem of gay teenagers. Well, of course, what this does is to bring a new sexual revolution, a huge sexual revolution in terms of morality, right into the public schools and put it right in front of public school children. Now, when the parents in Fayetteville, Arkansas complained, the original response from the school board was to remove these three titles from the general circulation collection into a parents-only section. But that wasn't good enough, not for those who demand that children have full access to these materials. And so just a few days ago, by a one-vote margin, that decision was reversed, and the books are now back in the general circulation. And the school board says it's trying to work out a plan whereby parents can prevent their kids from checking out particular books. But it's a mess. Now, a lot of people may wonder, why in the world would this happen in a community like Fayetteville, Arkansas? And the answer is actually more simple than you might imagine. Fayetteville is the home of the University of Arkansas. And as a general rule, wherever you find these university towns in the middle of even a conservative state, you'll find an abnormally liberal culture. And there are those who describe it in exactly those terms. The reporter for the Washington Times, looking at this story, described Fayetteville as a town, as a little blue community surrounded by a great big red state. And even the county right around Fayetteville, very conservative. But you have a very strong homosexual representation in Fayetteville, a very strong liberal representation. I found a lot of heartbreak as I read the accounts about this, and I've got about 400 pages of material here before me drawn from the websites and from the evidence and documents related to this controversy. You won't be surprised to know that the teenagers are up in arms because they're demanding that their reading not be censored, that they have full access to everything, and they're putting it in the highfalutin moral language of the fact that anyone who would prevent anyone from reading anything is simply a censor. And that those who are opposed to having these kinds of books available to children of any age are book banners. Now, since we're here, let's just also talk about the display you're likely to see at your local trade bookstore right now. It is Banned Books Celebration Time. And that commemoration when you walk in and they have all these books behind bars and chained to the table. You know, in reality, this whole issue of censorship is not only overblown, it's largely just a lie. When you actually look at what's behind what they call efforts at book banning, it's efforts by parents to say, I don't want my kid to read this book in this grade. It's by saying, we don't think this book's appropriate right here. It's not that there are people saying the author of this book ought to be put into jail or the publisher, you know, ought to be put into jail. There may be circumstances where that would be appropriate. After all, the Supreme Court has said there is such a thing as obscene speech and obscene works. But in the mainstream, what it's talking about here is parents and citizens just using discernment. The ALA in this controversy, the American Library Association, and other groups are very clear, suggesting that parents just shouldn't have the say. They explicitly have put it in just those words. Parents shouldn't have the say. They shouldn't have the right to determine what is in these libraries. Folks, we're standing here at the intersection of parents' rights and responsibilities on the one hand, and a very powerful political force on the other that says, we're going to decide what kind of materials children have access to in the public school library. I want to know what you think about this. Are you outraged? Are we just now morally disarmed from dealing with this? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'm Albert Moeller, and I'll be right back.
Listening to the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmoeller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Moeller.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. We're talking about a controversy in Fayetteville, Arkansas that really is part of a nationwide picture. And so our focus is not just on the Arkansas situation with its particulars, but on the general issue nationwide in terms of what's going on there. By the way, we tried to get on people who were participants in the Fayetteville incident and controversy. We invited them on the program. We invited people from the school district and from local newspaper and you name it. And they all said, no, they're tired of talking about it. Well, let me tell you, when you're in this business and someone says they're tired of talking about it, that's just the time you need to talk about it a little bit more, because it means they don't want to talk about it. My hunch is you do want to talk about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to go to Alexandria, Minnesota, where Brenda's on the line, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Brenda, welcome.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Well, I just think that young people, I think that most of the time, if they're brought up in the right home and they're brought up in the ways of the Lord, they won't look at that stuff or check that stuff out if it's there. So rather than like censorship it, you know, censor it from the library, these young people, they don't look at it. I teach too. So, you know, I know what I'm talking about, and these kids don't. They're taught in the ways of the Lord and they just don't look at it.
I'm not in a position to contradict your experience. I am in a position to say, I think as much as my parents had raised me as a Christian young man, if I had been in the public school library and one of these books crossed my eyes, I have a hard time believing I wouldn't have taken a few minutes to look at it, Brenda, just to be honest. I guess the question I would ask is, do you think this kind of material is appropriate for any kids to have access to?
Well, I think it's such a scary subject when we get into censorship, because they can censor our materials as well, and we wouldn't want them to censor Christian materials from places.
But they do, don't they? I know they do. When you talk about public school libraries, you're not going to find the bestsellers in the Christian titles there, are you?
What's that?
When you talk about a public school library, you're not going to expect to find in there commentaries on the New Testament books and the kind of material you'll find in a Christian bookstore, are you?
Probably not.
Yeah, well, I think the issue here, Brenda, so far as I see, is the use of the word censorship at all. And I appreciate your call. I just have to speak back and say I think that may be the problem here, because, first of all, I wouldn't apologize for even using the word when it comes to children and minors. I do believe we have a responsibility as parents and as a society to censor what they would see. I just can't believe anyone would really make the argument otherwise. There's some material no child should see. There's some material I don't believe anyone should see. But I'm willing as a citizen to say I really can't stop that from being published. I can't stop that from being available on the Internet. But I can do everything I can to stop children from getting there. And to dissuade others from going there as well. Brenda, I appreciate your call. Folks, what do you think about this? You know, what we're talking about here is not just material about biology. And I will fight for the right of the public schools to have all that scientific information about biological reproduction and all the rest. I'll contend for the fact that kids, by the time they graduate from high school, should have a very clear understanding of these things. And I think that's a legitimate educational purpose. The problem is, this isn't just about reproduction. It is about sexuality, and it's about what I would have to call pornography. You're talking about literary depictions of explicit sexuality. And I just can't believe that this has really happened the way it has. And I really can't believe there are groups that are organized and out there beating the bush to prevent parents from having the right to censor the material that will be put before their own children. And, for instance, the American Library Association, it blocks the use of Internet filters. It's very much opposed to that. Goes to court as a party in those cases. They oppose laws that would protect children from access to sexually explicit material and pornography. And again, I think most people just don't know this. They don't know that these groups are really out to prevent parents from having this kind of influence, especially when it comes to the public space. Folks, we're dealing with a battle for the minds of our children. This stuff is not value neutral. It's not morally neutral. It's not worldview neutral, not by a long shot. It's completely incompatible, much of this material. You just go to the website. I just almost beg you to go there. Just see it. Go to my commentary at albertmiller.com. Go to the link of this this website, and you will see the material, and you can judge for yourself. It's just not the kind of material I believe any young person should see. It is seductive. It is erotic. It is pornographic. It is sexually explicit. And I can tell you, it can't possibly be justified as a function of literature. I want to know what you think. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. I have one of these books right before me. It's entitled, It's So Amazing. This is one of the big three that was of first concern there in Fayetteville, Arkansas. This is a book. It's got cartoons and drawings and a lot of text. It's a kid's book. I mean, you just have to look at it. You know, it's a kid's book, and it is for kindergartners through children in the third grade. Penelope Leach, you may know, she's the British kid expert. She says it's upbeat, caring, and child-friendly. There are others that are quick to recommend it as well. But I don't recommend it. Let me tell you, it's got drawings in here of something I don't think any kindergartner needs to see. It talks about things I won't even mention here. But just to talk about how unvalue neutral it is, let's just talk about what kind of agenda is here. Let me just read to you from page 42. It says this, and there are times when a woman becomes pregnant and then chooses not to stay pregnant. She may then choose to have an abortion. An abortion is a medical way to end a pregnancy. Most women who have had an abortion can become pregnant again and give birth to a strong and healthy baby. Now, how's that for a happy little fairy tale? Presented to kids in the public schools as an educational process and an educational product in a book in the public library. This one entitled, It's So Amazing. You're going to love the subtitle. It says, a book about egg, sperm, birth, babies, and families. Now, that's what we want every kindergartner talking about. Let's go to Frazier calling from Flagstaff, Arizona, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Frazier, it's your turn. Frazier, will we lose you? All right, let's go to Homer from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go right ahead, sir.
Yes, Dr. Mueller, I was listening to your program on the way to work, and I realized that most of the problem that we have nowadays is the fact that most of us knew what we had in our libraries when we were growing up. And with today's society where both parents are working and everything is on the go, we really haven't taken the time to look at what's in our public libraries or even know how we would go about looking to see what's in our public libraries at school.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think when it comes to this kind of parental oversight, we have to recognize it does take time. It takes a lot of time, and parents are distracted. And as a matter of fact, the parents doing the best job often are the parents that have the least time to spend going through public library shelves looking at this. And, you know, it's really something very sad. It's tragic when you think about it. The parents will have to spend their time just making sure that this kind of material is not being put before their kids in a public school context or in the public library. I find that just horribly, horribly sad. And yet this is reality. This is the way it is when you look at the public schools. And not only that, let's just say that you have a school board that decides that what they're going to do is to actually say, we're going to take this material out. You can be just absolutely sure that there will be legal challenges from the other side, that there will be those who are pushing this kind of anti-censorship agenda, that's what they call it, who would jump in and say this is a matter of First Amendment rights and the representation of sexual minorities and all the rest. And they will say worse. The Little Rock newspaper, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, really went after this issue on the liberal side, really just making fun, dismissing condescendingly the concerns of these parents. And they celebrated the fact that Bobby New, the superintendent of the district there in Fayetteville, had received a letter from the NCAC. That's the National Coalition Against Censorship. And they said, well, this right-thinking group has made very clear that the school district would be wrong to censor anything. It says here, the coalition's arguments against hiding books from the kids make so much sense that they would probably scare the againers. They mean by that the people against the books as much as any of these books do. Well, that's haughty. But I don't think the Arkansas Democrat Gazette is going to quote the NCAC from its own website when in an article, a white paper entitled Identifying What is Harmful or Inappropriate for Minors, the NCAC says this, experts in human sexuality agree that there is no body of scientific evidence establishing that minors are harmed by reading or viewing pornography. Now, I want to make sure you heard that. This is the same group that wrote the letter that the paper is celebrating. They published a white paper that says, experts in human sexuality agree that there's no body of scientific evidence establishing that minors are harmed by reading or viewing pornography. In another article on the same group's website, they say this, that there is an inverse correlation between youthful exposure to pornography and sex offending among adolescents and adults. I'm quoting them here. They say, that is, sex offenders generally have less, not more, exposure to pornography as youths. One possible inference is that sex offending is causally related not to youthful exposure to sexually explicit material, but to its opposite, youthful repression, conflict, and guilt. Folks, I'm not making this up. You can go to my website, get all the documentation you need. This group is literally saying that it would be better to give kids pornography because then they're less likely to become sex offenders. These are the people who are advising the libraries. Let's go. Frazier's back with us in Flagstaff, Arizona. Frazier, it's your turn.
Hi, Albert. I had a comment. I completely agree with you on these books being shown, and I'll tell you why. When I was 12 years old, all it took was me watching a simple movie that had some derogatory things in it. A couple of people that went into a gay bar and realized it was a gay bar, and that got me interested in homosexuality. If I would have had more explicit material, it would have just fed that more, and I went through years of that lifestyle, and that was just one of the many things that fed me along the way that led me into that lifestyle. And I was saved when I was 20, but I went through 8 years of that type of thinking, and one of the main places that started was just something simple like that in a movie. So if they're explaining homosexuality and showing explicit material or any type of thing like that, I mean, it's going to get kids thinking in that direction, in that wrong way of thinking. And you know, no matter what parents try to teach their kids, that's what's going to happen. I totally believe that.
Frazier, I appreciate your call. I really appreciate your honesty here. And so what Frazier says just flies in the face of what this group is claiming, that exposure to pornography has no negative impact upon children, minors, teenagers. But, of course, I think the group writing this would not consider what Frazier is describing as harm. You see, I think that's the crucial worldview collision here. Frazier honestly spoke of his own homosexual experience as something that he now hates, something that did harm to his life. He speaks of his conversion experience as that which saved him out of that lifestyle, and he spoke of an exposure to homosexuality in a movie or television program as what kind of enticed him into it. But you see, I think the groups behind this would think that Frazier's just repressed, that unfortunately he's evidence of exactly the way they don't want it to go. I'm not overstating the case here, folks. They really believe that this kind of sexual experimentation is what people should seek, what children should be encouraged to go after. Or at least they'll say they ought to be exposed to material that would expose them to the idea so that they can make their own informed judgment about whether or not they want to experiment thusly. I think most parents would be so outraged they'd hardly know how to deal with it. And that's what we're talking about here on this program, and I'll be right back with some final thoughts. This is Albert Mohler. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Let me again refer you to my website. It's Albert Mohler, ALBERTMOHLER.com. And there you'll find a lot of helpful resources. You can find the radio program archived, MP3 edition. You can do podcasting. You can find the daily commentary along with usually several web blogs posted during a day, helpful links and other resources. And they're there for you. Because what I hope that we accomplish on this program is to get a conversation started, to help persons to understand how to get started learning about an issue, and then to use resources to find out even more. What we need in this generation are informed thinking Christians ready to take on the issues of the day, ready to talk about them at church, in the home, at the dinner table, in the workplace, at the school board meeting for that matter, ready to take an active part. One of the real things that that this lesson should teach us, this controversy in Arkansas and elsewhere, is that we need Christian parents, Christian citizens, more and more involved. Not just for the sake of political activism, but as a matter of witness. One of the opportunities we have in a controversy like this is to tell people why it is we believe what we believe. That's a very important part of Christian witness, to say, my understanding of human sexuality doesn't come from the fact that I've just read different books. My understanding about marriage or abortion or any other issue just doesn't come from the fact that I have a different starting place in terms of my secular understanding. We as Christians come back and say, look, we have to start with the fact that we don't get to make this up. We don't get to choose this on our own behalf. We are the creatures of a holy God who has made us, holds us accountable, and has a purpose for every dimension of our lives, including our sexuality and our relationships and all the rest. And we can talk about everything from the fact that there is a moral absolute, that there are divine moral laws, that they are unbreakable, non-negotiable moral commandments, and that an individual that sets himself or herself over against these things will bring irreparable harm into their lives. We also get to talk about what sin is. And you know, folks, when we get to talk about what sin is, we get to talk about what the gospel is. And there is the full circle of the kind of Christian argument that is comprehensive Christian witness. Folks, you'll see a news story out that is really breaking today and over the next several days on FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Authority, that is the agency, that is planning to reimburse faith-based groups for rescue efforts in the New Orleans and Mississippi Delta area. Folks, I'm proud of Bob Record and the North American Mission Board of the Southern Baptist Convention for being the very first to say, we don't want federal money. We're doing this because we serve the cause of Christ. We're doing this because we are volunteers. We don't want to be paid back. We just want to give more away. That's the essence of Christian witness, and I would really want to challenge any group that thinks it's going to get money back from the government. You don't want those strings, and don't dilute your witness. We'll be back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. This is a place for intelligent Christian conversation. I'll meet you there.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.